It went fine. It was fine. All right, Romans chapter 13. We started this series of lessons last week, and it's about the biblical role of government, what God thinks of government. And again, to be careful, this is not an anti-government tirade. This is not any of those things. And that's basically where we started at looking last week. The government was instituted by God. It is a God-ordained institution. That's what human government is. And so we're not out to abolish government, but we understand that anything that God sets up and man gets his hands on can be corrupted. And more than likely is going to be corrupted. And we have to recognize the God-ordained origin of government. God established three different things. We talked about this all last week. I don't mean to be redundant in it. But He established the family back in Genesis chapter 2. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. God instituted marriage and the family in Genesis chapter 2. And when man doesn't include God in family, it's a disaster. And that happens time and time and time again. It's a God-ordained institution, but when man tries to run it with his own power and strength, it's not going to work. You need God. You need three people in a marriage. You need the husband and the wife, and you need the Lord God. All right, He instituted the church. And the church is great. We love the church. But we need to be careful not to put too many human hands on it. Because if we do, we're going to corrupt it. The purpose of the church is for the preaching of the gospel, the propagation of the gospel, the strengthening of saints. And sometimes churches wander off and get involved in things that are not in their lane and try to put things, and even with good intent many times, with good intentions, get involved in other things. And that's not what God has called us to do. And when man puts his hands on what God has ordained, we can make a mess out of it. And so we try to stay in our lane, I guess is the phrase that we can use. We try to stay with what God has instituted and how God wants it to operate. Well, God has instituted human government. We took a lot of time last week looking at all the passages, all the way back starting in Exodus, going to 2 Chronicles, to Psalms, into the New Testament, here to Romans, to 1 Timothy and to Peter. We went through all those verses simply understanding that God is the one that formed human government. And so when the Bible has that much to say about something, we can't avoid it. We can't stick our head in the sand and say, well, we're not going to talk about politics. God has instituted human government. But we do need to stay in the lane. And we do need to realize that God laid down some groundwork for human government, their responsibilities and their roles, and our role as citizens. And so that's basically what we're looking at in this study. Now look at Romans 13, very familiar passage. We'll read just the first five verses tonight as we begin this second lesson in it. Romans 13 and verse number 1, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Now what are these powers that be? Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror of good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is a minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. The role of government is easily laid out or described in the first five verses of Romans chapter 13. Now, first of all, let's just simply say that God can define something in five verses shows the power of God. Try to get any lawmaker or legislature to explain something in that many words, and it's impossible. They have to have 630 pages to describe any new law or any new legislation or anything like that. And again, that's human hands getting involved on it. And so I'm always impressed with the simplicity of God and the compactness of the Word of God, that in these five verses we have basically the outline for the role of government, what the function of government is. Now, before we even look at these things, I want you to understand this, and we may make no qualms about it. We are far removed from God's original intent for human government here in the United States of America. And I don't think anybody would argue that. Once you see what God's intent was, you're going to say, well, yeah, but our government does a lot more than that. Yes, they do. Every human government does a lot more than that, because once they get into that position, they have some power. And it's so easy for you and I that have no power to criticize those that have power. Power goes to your head. And you can take a very good and sincere and honest and hardworking young man or young woman and put them in a position of some authority, and unless they remain humble, that authority is going to go to their head. And when it comes to politics, it's no different than that. Politicians, folks, can you just write this down? And there's very few exceptions. Politicians are going to be men and women of extreme ego. Now, that doesn't make them necessarily bad people, but they're going to be people of big ego. Why else would you want to desire this position or that position or this office? Now, I know, well, I want to be a public servant. Yeah, that sounds so nice. And that's a good motive, and I believe that some young people really get to that. But once you get into that, it gets tough. And so I'm not throwing stones at folks. I'm saying that's a hard thing to do, and I understand that. But we are removed from God's original intent. You hear that words all the time, the original intent of the Constitution, the original intent of what Bible writers, the people they were writing to at the time they're writing to. And we have come a long way, and we'll probably... To me, as I look at it, it's impossible for us to ever get back to the original intent of God's institution of human government. But we need it. It is a necessity. That's why God created it. All right? It was the powers that be are ordained of God. God is the one that made human government. And thank God for it. Look back at the book of Judges, chapter 17. Judges chapter 17. Without government, we have chaos. Now, I know the first response is sometimes with government, and I understand that. But the simple truth is that without government, there is chaos. Judges chapter 17, verse number 6. Judges 17, verse 6. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Judges 17:6. In those days there was no king in Israel. But every man did that which is right in his own eyes. Can I say this? And I think we agree. We don't want to live in a world, in a country, in a state, in a city, in a community where everybody does that which is right in their own eyes. Because there's a lot of folks that have an evil eye. And what's yours is mine, and I'll come and take it. And so we have to have some restraint, humanly speaking, down here. God does not from up in heaven watch down and then strike down every evil person and reward every good person. So He instituted human government to do that very thing among us. And so we find that there are roles for government. I make this very simple. There are two roles for government. A cinnamon roll? No. There are two roles for government, and they are this: to protect and to punish. Original intent, Romans chapter 13, to protect and to punish. Notice in verse number 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. A man rushes into a store in Colorado and begins to shoot up the place. He needs to be arrested. He needs to be punished. He needs to be put in prison. He needs to die in, well, I was going to say die in prison, but we'll get to what really should happen in a few moments. Something should happen to him. His life should be given for the lives that were taken. The government's job is to protect us from evil. protect us from men like that. Now, again, government is no simple solution. Because look at what's come out from these two shootings recently. Beginning of the week, it was down in Atlanta. Some massage parlors got shot up by a guy that had an immoral addiction. And he went and he shot up the place. Now someone has gone into this place in Colorado. 10 people were killed, including a police officer who has 7 children, if I got my statistics right. It is the government's responsibility to protect us from those men, from those people. Now the government is divided on how to do that, all right? Obviously. A lot of them say, take away all the AR-15s, AK-15s. Take those all away from the 20 million people that have them because those two guys went berserk and shot everybody up. So take it away from everybody else. The others are saying, no, it's our right to have those to protect ourselves when you can't protect us. Now, there's the two sides of the argument, and there's a divide that's never going to be brought back together again. And whoever's in power is going to try to persuade it one way or the other. And most of us, I think, have an argument that we can't see the other side's reasoning. We know what it is, but we can't go along with it. The government's job is to protect us. And thank God that they're there to do it. Now, they're human. They couldn't know before those two things happened that they were going to happen to be there to stop them from happening. But they can get there as quickly as they can when it happens, and justice and judgment are the responsibility of the government. So it's their job to protect us. Rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou not be afraid of the power? You should be. To do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. So their job is to protect the general population. Most Americans, I know I'm making a sweeping statement, but I think I'm right. Most Americans are just trying to live and work in peace. Trying to get along with their neighbors, get along with their co-workers. And we're human, and sometimes we get neighbors that are jerks. I'm not going to say sometimes we're the neighbor. No, that never happens. Sometimes we get co-workers that just are unreasonable people. But most Americans, the vast majority of us, just want to live our lives and work and provide for our families and do what we're supposed to do in peace. But there are others that don't have those goals. And the government's role is to protect the general populace from those people. Not just locally through the police department and detectives and jails and prisons and things like that, but also against foreign enemies to protect us from those that would come from outside to do us harm. Those 9/11 culprits that came in and did what they did. This fellow that shot up in Colorado, apparently an immigrant from Syria that came in. We have to. How do I say this without getting political? We have to build our borders. We have to be careful of who's coming into our country. Again, it's hard to say this without being real precise, but we have to protect ourselves against foreign invasion. Nobody wanted in the 70s and 80s. Nobody wanted Russia to attack us. Back in World War II, Japan, the great fear was that they weren't going to stop with Pearl Harbor and Hawaii. The talk was they were going to come to California. And we in World War II, we greatly strengthened our West Coast from California all the way inland with military bases and all that, getting ready to fight a battle against Japan, which thankfully never materialized on our West Coast. But our government's job is to protect us from enemies, foreign and domestic. That's the government responsibility. Rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. So they establish laws protecting our rights and properties and providing leadership and law enforcement and by giving us national defense against foreign enemies. Their responsibility is to protect their people. The second responsibility is to punish the wrongdoers. Verse 4, for he is a minister of God to thee for good, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. All right, lawbreakers should fear the government. Lawbreakers should fear the government. You know, it's a sad thing when you talk to some kids, and I'll say this carefully, there's some areas of Cambridge where you talk to some kids, and when they see a police car, they automatically think bad guy. And I know back when I was a teenager growing up, some of the kids would refer to the policemen as pigs and call them disrespect. That was something in the 60s. That was a big thing back then, disrespecting authority and all that. Well, their responsibility is to protect us. And they're not our enemy. They are our friend. Now, there might be, in police enforcement, there might be some who get a little bit of power and authority and they abuse that. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But the majority of those in law enforcement are not there because they want to be the boss. They're there to do what their job controls them to do. Anytime I get pulled over, which I try to minimize, I really do. And it's been a while, I'm thankful to say. I would say something else, but it's been being recorded, so I'm not going to say it. But anytime I have been pulled over, I've been very respectful to the officer that's pulled me over. They're doing their job. And I'll be honest, they've never pulled me over without a reason. One time it was just a headlight that was out and I didn't know about it and they gave me a warning. That was all that happened there. That's fine. But they're there for our protection. They're there to protect us. And then when it goes farther, when those that break the law have to be punished, they're there to do that. Now, again, it's man-made, so a lot of people that should be punished get away with it. That happens because it's out of control. But that is the role of the government, to punish those that are doing wrong. The Old Testament was a great example of this, was it not? Again, Exodus 18 is where God instituted that government, having Moses appoint 1,000 other judges to take care of the lower cases so he could be the Supreme Court and take care of the hard cases and take the burden off of him. And anybody that came with any kind of argument, and the Old Testament law laid down all kinds of things about theft, if somebody took something that belonged to their neighbor, about murder, about fraudulent claims, accusing people, someone. There had to be two or three witnesses for everything to be established. The Old Testament laid down all these things. God gave Israel authorities and leaders to make judgments and to punish wrongdoers. That's the purpose of government. All right? To protect us and to punish wrongdoings. When someone did wrong in the Old Testament and there was a dispute, they came before the judges. The judges made a decision. They issued the punishment. The punishment was carried forth. Notice in the middle of verse 4 here in Romans 13. For he beareth not the sword in vain. What does that phrase mean when it comes to the government? He beareth not the sword in vain. Well, look back at Genesis 9, and we might have done this last week, I don't remember. But look back at Genesis chapter 9. Here is an Old Testament principle. An Old Testament command of God. Let's be honest. Genesis, right? Genesis 9. That's Old Testament. That's old, Old Testament. All right? We're talking Genesis 9. Noah's just getting his feet wet coming off the boat. Getting his feet dry coming off the boat after all that rain. In Genesis 9:6, God said this, Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. God instituted what we call in our day capital punishment, and saying that if a man premeditatively and purposely took someone else's life, their life was to be taken in exchange for it. Now, there were places of refuge if it was an accident. The story is given, a man's chopping wood with an axe. The axe head flies off and hits the other guy and kills him. Wasn't premeditated. You're not to kill that man for that. He was to be protected. But if it was premeditated, then his life was to be taken for it. An Old Testament truth that many say is not a New Testament truth. But I think they're wrong. Because of that phrase we just saw in verse number 4. That they bear not the sword in vain. What does that mean if it doesn't mean that evil is to be punished? To give an example, that Charles Manson, who some of you younger probably don't even know who that guy is, but he's been in prison since the 1960s for gross murder of Sharon Tate and others in that Mansonite cult that he had, and yet here for 60 years? I think he is. He's still alive. No? Yes, no? Nobody knows? Okay. Last I knew, he's still alive, but he's not getting out of jail. But for 60 years, feeding him, clothing him, giving him everything he needs in the prison cell. You know what the Bible said? If man sheds blood, by man is his blood to be shed. He beareth not the sword in vain. And that's just an extreme example, but it's as simple. And again, man is involved, and so, well, DNA will prove later that they were innocent, this or that. There's all those arguments going. The government's job is to protect. The government's job is to punish. They brought their cases before the people. The wrongdoer was punished. The rightdoer was rewarded. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy chapter 16. Verse number 18. Deuteronomy 16, verse 18. Judges and officers shalt thou make thee in all thy gates, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, throughout thy tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. They shall not wrest judgment. Thou shalt not respect persons, neither take a gift. And we'll get into all this later when we look at the responsibilities of those in government. For a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous. So judgment is to be a just judgment, rewarding those that do good, punishing those that do evil. That's the responsibility of government, to protect and to punish. Look over at chapter 17, this same book, in verse number 8. Deuteronomy 17 and verse 8, the Lord said, if there arise a matter too hard for thee in judgment, between blood and blood, between plea and plea, between stroke and stroke, being matters of controversy within thy gates, then shalt thou arise and get thee up into the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt come unto the priests, the Levites, and unto the judge that shall be in those days, and inquire, and they shall show thee the sentence of judgment. And thou shalt do according to the sentence which the Lord shall choose, shall show thee. And thou shalt observe to do according to all that they inform thee, according to the sentence of the law, which they shall teach thee, according to the judgment which they shall teach thee, thou shalt do. Thou shalt not decline from the sentence which they shall show thee, to the right hand, to the left. And the man that will do presumptuously and will not hearken to the priest that standeth to minister there before the Lord thy God or unto the judge, even that man shall die. And thou shalt put away evil from Israel. And all the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. The Old Testament law was clear. The role of the government was to protect people from those that do evil, to protect, to punish. Look over at 1 Peter chapter 2. The book of 1 Peter chapter 2. We were just in there Sunday night. No, that was 2 Peter. This is 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 13. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13. Submit yourself to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors, as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. There's the roles of government. To punish the evildoer, to protect those that do well. The role of the government, to protect, to punish, and number three, there is no number three. The role of government in Scripture is to protect and to punish. And let me say this, I believe if you read a lot of our early American colonial history, that's all the government did, protect and punish. They did not interject themselves into every manner of thing that happened. They were there to protect and to punish. And when our Constitution was written, it was written on the basis of the biblical role of government, to protect and to punish. The government was never intended to be an intrusive, involved institution in every area of the lives of its citizens. Now again, I say that understanding that from God's original intent, the elephant has grown. And it has become extremely large. And there's probably no way to shrink the elephant. There's no way to get it back in that little cage that it started from. But this was God's original intent when He formed government, to protect and to punish, to maintain the general peace. Because without it, there is anarchy. When there was no king, every man did that which is right in his own eyes. God has instituted human government to keep evil in check and preserve the general peace of society. The preamble to our Constitution says this, and you'll recognize these words. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. That's the preamble to our Constitution. Our Declaration of Independence says, knowing that governments were instituted among men, and they were instituted to protect and to punish. But here's the catch. Government was never intended to provide. Now I'm going to pause for a moment. It was never the intent of God for the government to provide. So mail back your stimulus check. Refuse to receive Social Security. Don't take any Medicare. Now, I picked those things because those are the things that usually we don't have a problem with. We have a problem with food stamps and welfare and government intrusion, all those things. But those that benefit us, we really don't, you know, those aren't so bad. The government needs to pay for my hospitalization and my health care, and the government should pay for my retirement. And it was never the original intent of government to be the provider for people. Now, what are you going to do about it? Okay, that's up to you. You want to mail your stimulus check back? Go ahead. If it offends you that much, the government gave you, I would recommend you do this. Just go on the back of it, sign it, hand it to me, and I will make sure it goes to the right place. All right. I know you don't even get checks, so we can't even talk about it that way anymore. Jane came in tonight because of Sunday sermon. She looked up the 10 richest preachers in America because we're talking about that Sunday night at church. She went and Googled it and looked at the 10 richest preachers, and she was amazed that I wasn't on that list. That's your fault. You know that, right? Who was it? $330 million was the number one guy. $350 million. Kenneth Copeland. I'm just saying that. She looked it up. I didn't. Number eight was Joel Osteen. Oh, higher than that. How many million? 40. Yeah, see, I just barely made the cutoff of that top 10. All right, so anyways, the government, its purpose is to protect and to punish, not to provide. Now, I don't know how you roll the clock back. I don't know how you take care of that thing. How would you do that? I went in the nursing home to see Tom today, and all those people that are in there and the exorbitant prices that are charged, and Medicare's paying that, and the government's doing it. It's a mess. It's above my pay grade how to figure all that stuff out. I know that. But that was never the intent of the government, because once they do that, they've overstepped their bounds. Now they become your provider, and they weren't supposed to be your provider. Supposed to be your protector, your punisher, but not your provider. Well then, how do you take care of the poor? Jesus said the poor you have always with you. How do you help the homeless? What was the biblical remedy for that? Well, I'm glad you asked. Look at 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. And again, I'm just laying the groundwork from what the Bible says. I know there are so many questions. What about this? What about that? And those, especially in politics, well, we couldn't go back to that biblical formula. Second Thessalonians chapter 3. I know it's here in my Bible somewhere. It was there earlier when I looked. There it is. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Look at verse 10. Paul said this. Paul is writing, not just his own thoughts and opinions, but writing by inspiration of God. And he says, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat." Now, let me first of all say, before you throw stones or rotten tomatoes, I didn't write that. Don't blame me. If any didn't work, neither should he eat. For we hear there are some with walk among you which are disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. All right, the Bible command is for a man to work and provide for himself, for his own. And the government has decided that that's too harsh. And that the government needs to be the provider for able-bodied people. And that's what we're talking about right now, able-bodied people. The government has decided they're going to take care of able-bodied people who could work. Maybe not in this field or that field, but they could work doing something. When you do that, you promote a good work ethic. When you tell them, well, you might not be able to do this or that, but go do this. Do something. Work somewhere. It creates character. It's good for you. It's amazing. Work for 2 weeks and you'll find you get a paycheck at the end of that. It's an amazing thing. My daughter, we took Erin to McDonald's yesterday to pick up her paycheck because it was Tuesday. Well, she got paid last Tuesday. And the check was sitting there in the safe for another week, and the other kids her age are all thinking, "You didn't know payday was last week? What's the matter with you? They're all there the minute it's issued. They're in there to get it. But you work a couple weeks, and an amazing thing happens. You get money. And we won't talk about how much money is missing when you get it, but you get money. We are to work to provide for ourselves and our families. That is the biblical formula. Work to provide for ourselves and our families. Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Verse 11. Paul said this, "And that you study to be quiet and to do your own business and to work with your own hands as we commanded you." The only handout you should get is from your right hand to your left hand, as you are working and laboring and providing for yourself. Nowhere in Scripture is the government given the authority or the responsibility. There were poor people back then. There were sick people back then. God never told the government, "Hey, it's your responsibility to take care of those folks." Now again, what's the solution for that is? That's something else. I'm just saying, here's what God instituted. The government is to protect and to punish. Not to provide, never to provide. Anytime it says this is a government-funded program, uh-oh. No wonder our national debt is where it is. You know, and they could say we're going to do a stimulus program and it's $1.9 trillion. Remember playing Monopoly when you're a kid? It's just play money, you know. I think that's what our politicians think money is. $1.9 trillion, just handed out like it's really there. Just like Monopoly money. We are to work and provide for ourselves. Do your own business, to work with your own hands, that you may have lack of nothing, it says. That you may have lack of nothing. Look over to 1 Timothy, right after 1 and 2 Thessalonians. 1 Timothy chapter 5. All right, what if a person can't work? And that happens, doesn't it? Physically incapable of working. Illness, sickness, disease, sometimes it happens. So the government steps in with, I forgot what it's called. Unemployment, there you go. Unemployment benefits. The government will take care of it when you can't. It is what it is. Not the biblical formula. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 4. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents. For that is good and acceptable before God. You know what the Bible solution was for those that can't work? Is that family takes care of them. And I think all of us would agree. That's our job as family. You know, you see somebody that's homeless, you see somebody that's poor and destitute, and our heart goes out for them. I know our first reaction sometimes, is it legitimate or not? And that's an honest question. But sometimes there are, and I just think, you know, I don't know about you, but in my family, that could never happen. Now, I should say by the grace of God, I know that. But I look at my brother and my two sisters, and man, if the bottom dropped out tomorrow, the other three of us would be there for the fourth one. There's no doubt about it. Mom or dad, when they were still alive, had that problem. If one of my kids, family does everything they can to provide for them. You relieve the government of that responsibility. It's not theirs. In case you're not able, family is to provide. If both of those are unable to help, look at James chapter 2. See, the Bible's got a program. Work for yourself, make your living. That is the general standard principle and procedure. And that is effective for at least 80% of the populace. All right? Work, provide. Get a job. It might not be the one you want. It might not be the one you're best qualified for. But get one. And once you get that one and you show that you're reliable and you show up for work and you're a good character and good work ethic, those that you work for are going to notice that, and you'll either get promoted within or you'll find another job, a step up somewhere else over you. It'll be there somewhere. James chapter 2, verse number 15. If a brother or sister be naked or destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? If a brother or sister be naked or destitute of food, you know what the Christian response is? Brother, I'll help you. Sister, I'll take care of that. I'll do what I can, and if I can't do enough, I'll find somebody else to help, and we will take care of that for you. Now, if it's a Christian person who's got the right work ethic anyways, they're not going to want help. Have you noticed that? That those that have worked and are self-sufficient, when they're the one in need, they don't want to be in need. When you get a person that's in need and likes being in need and likes being the center of attention, you've got a problem there. But when you have a brother or sister that's in need, you do what you can to take care of them. You do what you can to provide for them. That's the biblical response. Look at Romans chapter 12. Just a couple more verses, we'll be done tonight. Romans chapter 12. One verse, look at verse 13. Romans chapter 12, verse 13. Distributing to the necessity of saints. The responsibility as believers is to distribute to the necessity of the saints. Many times I get phone calls, and it's somebody that's had some tragedy happen, whether someone's gotten sick. Man will say, my wife is sick, she's in the hospital, I need gasoline to get there. And things like that are hard to turn a guy down for. But there's an angle to everything. you don't say, okay, meet me at the church and I'll give you some cash. No, we meet at the gas pump across the street and we put some gas in the car and make sure they're doing. And I don't think I've run across one of those guys that was crooked doing that. But when it comes to the saints, we look for their necessity. We look to see what we can do to help, to be given to hospitality, distributing to the necessity of the saints. And when someone has a need, you help them, you take care of them. So it's not the role of government to do that. It's the individual providing for themselves, for their family. When they can't, their family provides for them. When they can't, then the church believers do all that they can to help them. There's even one other formula. Look back in Leviticus 19, and I like this story. And we'll pretty much close here. Leviticus chapter 19. You know, there are other avenues available to avoid going to the government for help. And we call them in our day charities. All right, there are a lot of humanitarian charities that are set up and not always government funded. Again, some of them are government funded. But there are a lot of charities that raise money to help people to do things. Sometimes folks will call here and we don't have the means at the time to help. And I'll say, call Salvation Army. That's an organization that's there to help people when they're in need. And they take furniture and they take stuff. If somebody's house burns down and they need those kind of things, you can get them there, clothing places, stuff like that. No problem with all that. Relieving the government from that responsibility. Leviticus chapter 19, here's kind of how the Lord took care of that in the Old Testament law. Leviticus 19 and verse 9. And when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and stranger. I am the Lord your God. Under the law, they were to have a charitable spirit. When they went out, say it's a cornfield, a gigantic cornfield, and they go out there and plow, they go to harvest all the corn. They were around the corners, not to go all the way up into the corner and cut across, make sure you get every last ear. That would be my nature, especially with corn on the cob. Get every single last one of those. They roast up good. They were to round the corners of those fields and leave it for the poor and the stranger. You read the book of Ruth and see how God used that very system to provide for Naomi and Ruth when they came back into the land and were broke. So there was a system, even in the Old Testament, of being charitable to others of whom you had no idea who they were, but find a way to give to benefit others. If everybody does it, then the government doesn't have to do it, because when you do it for a stranger, there's no strings attached. When the government does it, they've got control. And that's in a corrupt government, that's exactly what they're looking for, a way to do that. So the role of government is simply this: provide, not provide, the role of government: protect and punish. It's not to provide. And again, you look now at human government, whatever country it is, whatever form of government, and I'll say this, I believe that our form of government in the United States of America, a republic, not a democracy, we're not a democracy, we're a republic, big difference between the two. And republic is the greatest form of government that I've ever seen. Now, I know the Bible system was a monarchy when they wanted a king and God gave them kings and England had kings and all that. But look what America's done in 250 years that the rest of the world has not done in all their thousands of years. You know, you go to Europe, to Germany, and they say, look at that building's 5,000 years old. We in America, we find an old building. It was built in the 1800s. And they think that's nothing over there. Yeah, but they've not done for the rest of the world what the United States of America has done. And I believe our form of government is great. It's good, but it's not perfect. And whatever we can do to try to turn it back, you're not going to destroy it and start all over again, but try to turn it back. That's the biblical form of government. All right, let's stand together this evening.